Good morning, everybody. My name's Ben. I'm one of the leaders here, along with Andrew and Matt. And if you're visiting us this morning, my particularly warm welcome to you. I thought that Matt's comment about the swimming pool was excellent. And might even have some bearing on what we're saying this morning. We'll see. I hope I can trust you all, because I want to share something this morning. One of my great longings in life is to have deeper relationships. To be able to fully trust others with more of what's going on inside my life. To feel more wholly accepted, no matter how incompetent or ugly I feel. To not fear being rejected. I wish that I knew the people around me better. I wish that I knew the internal motivations of those around me more. My co-workers, my boss, my friends, my neighbours. I wish I cared more. I wish I was a better friend. I wish I was a better brother. I wish I was a better neighbour. In short, I long to be closer, more knitted into the community around me than I am today. I long for more intimacy. I'm not talking sexual intimacy, I mean relational intimacy. I long for that. And I know that in my failings, I'm often the one who stands in the way of that. And it's frustrating. I was reflecting recently about my upbringing with someone, and when I was growing up, I spent the first 9 years of my life growing up in London. I moved when I was nine. I moved to Cambridge. When I was 11, I moved up to Ulverston in South Cumbria. When I was 13, I moved down here and spent my teenage years kind of growing up just down the road in Chasewater. And whilst there were some real strengths to seeing lots of different places, it built a certain temporary expectation into my relationships, that expectation of what's going to happen, not so much with my family, but with those outside it. And this fundamental kind of temporary expectation of relationship means that trust and intimacy can be hard to build. It's hard work for me to just say things as they are and trust that people still want to know me. It's something I've worked on and worked on. It's a lot easier to wear a mask. Now, I wonder if you ever find that it's easier to wear a mask. Maybe you have the same hang-ups as me. If you do, I hope that today's going to be helpful. If not, then you can enjoy a nap for the next 30 minutes or so, or else take frantic notes for that person in your life who you know does have this problem. I wonder what brought you here today. There are a lot of different reasons why people come to Grace Church on a Sunday, aren't there? You might be coming to enjoy God, to meet up with friends. Maybe you're coming just because you always do. That's what you do on a Sunday morning. Or you might be here out of politeness to somebody. Somebody dragged you along. They said they wouldn't feed you if you didn't come to church. Well, we all have a lot of growing to do, but whoever you are most welcome. I'm hoping that even if you've never picked up a Bible, you've never even wanted to, that you will get something from the next 30 minutes. And I'm going to need God's help with that. I suggest we pray. I'm going to ask that we meet Jesus. The title of this series, as you can see from up there, is Face to Face. It's actually Face to Face with Jesus, encountering Jesus in John. If you're not sure that God exists, or if he does, that he even listens to you, I suggest you pray anyway. It can't do any harm. So I'm just going to lead us. Jesus, we want to meet you today. We know that we're not going to meet you physically right now, but we ask that you send your spirit down so that we get to know you a bit more. We want to know on a personal level what you're like. As we read an episode from your life, Jesus, please help us to see that it's more than just an interesting story. We want to get to know you more. Amen. So today we're going to read a short episode from Jesus' life from a book called John's Gospel. For those of you with Bibles to hand, we're in John chapter 5. The words will be up on the screen shortly. Now, we don't know precisely when John's Gospel was finally written, but it seems to be pretty likely from indications it was finished around 30 years after Jesus' death, probably by a guy called John, hence it's called John's Gospel, one of Jesus' closest friends. And maybe 30 years to you might sound like a bit of a delay, but in those days, people tended to remember stuff, not so much by writing it down, but by recounting stories to one another orally. And this was a really well-practiced tradition. So the stories are good. The level of distortion is low. Certainly beats the internet. Here's the start of the account. Jesus returned to Jerusalem for one of the Jewish holy days. Inside the city, near the sheep gate, was the pool of Bethsaida, with five covered porches. Crowds of sick people, blind, lame, or paralyzed, lay on the porches. One of the men lying there had been sick for 38 years. When Jesus saw him and knew he had been ill for a long time, he asked him, "Would you like to get well?" "I can't, sir," the sick man said, "for I have no one to put me into the pool where the water bubbles up. Someone else always gets there ahead of me." Okay, before we go any further, let's just take a look at this bit. Jesus is in Jerusalem. This is a large city in the scale of the time, being about 500,000 people crammed on top of a big hill. Jesus was there for this special day, so it's probably the population was swelled a bit, quite a lot of people around. Jesus is perfectly well, but he decides to go to this pool of Bethsaida. Or Bethesda, sorry. Now, this was at the time believed to be a healing pool, and so there were a lot of really quite sick people around it, as we can see. Now, being blind or lame or paralyzed, it's no joke, is it? It's no joke in any society. Even in Britain today, with all of the wealth of the society and what we're able to provide through the NHS and various other services, people who are unable to see or people who are unable to walk, they are going to find it hard to engage in day-to-day life like everyone else. In first century Palestine, it was far worse. There were no wheelchairs to help the paralyzed. So the man Jesus meets here would have probably been unable to get around by himself, except possibly by dragging himself about on his knuckles. That's quite deeply humiliating. What's more, people who are paralyzed often lose control of their bladder and bowel functions. And that creates a pretty huge hygiene problem. In a society without washing machines, without modern healthcare, you can just imagine what life would have been like for people like him. Here's an image of somebody unable to walk in one of the poorer parts of the world today. He's begging in a market. In fact, probably like the man that Jesus met, this is probably the only form of income open to him. The man that Jesus approached was probably embarrassingly dependent on those around him. Anyone who would take mercy on him, simply to move around, to clean, to do anything, he would have had no hope of any status, of a spouse, of any future at all. Here we see that Jesus chose to go and find those generally thrown out by society, lumped together by this pool, and hoping beyond hope that they might be healed one day. And he comes to this man who's been sick for 38 years, that's slightly longer than I've been alive. He doesn't shrink back from his condition, this man's condition, one bit, however misshapen and dirty this man may have been. Jesus is deeply compassionate. And also notice, he's not so arrogant as to say that he knows the man's intentions or impose himself on him. He simply asks whether he wants to be healed. Let's see what happens next. Jesus told him, "Stand up, pick up your mat, and walk." Instantly, the man was healed. He rolled up his sleeping mat and began walking. Wow. Now, I know for those of us who've been hearing these accounts for a long time, when we've been thinking about them, meditating on them maybe, well, we're kind of used to believing this stuff is happening. If you're interested in Jesus and you're having a hard time believing them today, well, no worries. You might have heard the phrase, doubting Thomas. That was one of Jesus' close friends who had seen him do these kinds of things for 3 years. And yet when Jesus rose from the dead, he wouldn't believe it until he saw it for himself in person. So there's no pressure here. But if you're interested, I will tell you a reason why I do believe it. This is one of the many reasons I have for believing it. In nearly every account of Jesus performing a miracle, Jesus doesn't make a big thing of it. He heals people. And yes, he walks on water. But it's quite rare that he really calls big attention to it. A lot of the time he tells people not to go on about it too much. It's like he has this miraculous power, and out of compassion for all those around him, he sees suffering, he has to heal them. It's like he's compelled to heal them. But often, it feels like he doesn't want it to get out. He's not like a stage miracle worker telling people to come and follow him, and this is what it's all about, that he's this amazing person. When Jesus takes the stage and has stuff to say, he generally puts the focus on other things. So I think this speaks to me of real authentic, true authentic power. He's not doing these things to build a platform for himself. And that's unusual. So if, like me, you do believe the eyewitness testimony of one of Jesus' friends, then this is something else. Jesus heals this man. For 38 years, this man has been unable to walk. No doubt his leg muscles would have been entirely wasted away. So right before everyone's eyes, this man visibly changed. I mean, that entire lower half of his body visibly changed. Whatever was internally wrong was healed, but also his muscles must have completely regrown, just the mass around his legs. His nerves healed so that he was able to walk. Now, I don't know how he walked. I imagine he was probably a bit wobbly. I mean, a bit like a toddler walking or something, I'd have thought, after 38 years of no practice. Just incredible. So let's read the rest of this account. Let's see what happened. This miracle happened on the Sabbath. So the Jewish leaders objected. They said to the man who was cured, "You can't work on the Sabbath. The Lord doesn't allow you to carry that sleeping mat." But he replied, "The man who healed me told me, 'Pick up your mat and walk.'" "Who said such a thing as that?" they demanded. The man didn't know, for Jesus had disappeared into the crowd. But afterwards, Jesus found him in the temple and told him, "Now you are well, so stop sinning, or something even worse may happen to you." Then the man went and told the Jewish leaders that it was Jesus who had healed him. So the Jewish leaders began harassing Jesus for breaking the Sabbath rules. But Jesus replied, "My Father is always working, and so am I." So the Jewish leaders tried all the harder to find a way to kill him. For he not only broke the Sabbath, he called God his Father, thereby making himself equal with God. Okay, so what is going on here? We go from a man healed, carrying a mat, to a bunch of people trying to kill Jesus in a very, very short space of time. Now, I don't know about you, but it's been a while since I've been down to a homeware shop on a Sunday and seen someone standing outside with a shotgun ready to take out the people walking out with mats on a Sunday. It hasn't happened. Certainly brings new meaning to the word, "I'm off to the range," doesn't it? But we've got some serious cultural understanding to do here. First of all, we have to understand the situation a little bit more broadly. The Jews at the time were under occupation by the Romans. Their way of life was being overseen by their imperial overseers. They felt the pressure of being part of the empire, but they wanted to hold strongly onto their identity. They weren't just another conquered people, they were the people of God. The Jewish nation, since its inception, had been distinct in many ways, and one of the ways they held on to this distinctiveness, that's the right word, was by holding on to their laws. Not only that, but the Jewish leaders that are referred to here would have believed that they believed that obeying these laws gave them favor in God's eyes, and they were hoping for God to come and rescue them from this oppression by the Romans. So they thought this would, by keeping their laws, that would make it more likely that this was going to happen. And one of the more important laws was the law of the Sabbath. The law stated that no one should work on the Sabbath, the holy day of the week. Now, over time, this broad terminology of working had been carefully defined by all the Jewish leaders and the teachers. And by this point, there were 38 different categories of work that were specifically banned by the Jewish teaching tradition, and carrying items from one place to another, such as a mat, this wasn't allowed. So any accidental or deliberate infringement required an extra sacrifice to be made at the temple to make up for it. This man was carrying his mat around, didn't look like he was about to make a sacrifice, he actually seemed quite proud of the fact, and I'm not quite sure what continued deliberate infringement would have resulted in, but the punishments that we read about in the Ten Commandments include total separation from the community and even death. So to them, this is not a minor or laughing matter. So back to this episode that we're looking at. The Jewish leaders are not responding in amazement at the healing, the fact that this man has been brought from a life of total exclusion, humiliation, entirely healed, so that he actually has a future now. He actually has hope for the future. That isn't what gets them. What gets them is their horror at him breaking the Sabbath rules. The keeping of rules is a major component of their life, and it's simply not acceptable to them. And this points to how they relate to God. They seem to think that God is mostly a harsh judge looking for failure. I wonder how this is how you think of God sometimes. Do you think, I've not been praying enough recently? Or I shouted at my kids, and so you think, oh, God thinks I'm a rubbish person. He won't listen to me, he'll ignore me. Maybe even punish me. If that's how you think of God, or just sometimes think of God, then you wouldn't be alone. I reckon that millions of people around the world think of God that way. What's more, we can see that when the man finds Jesus again, Jesus tells him to stop sinning. So is Jesus reinforcing this view of God? So some people think that Jesus is telling him to stop some particular sin that caused this disability in the first place, that disability was a punishment. Well, I'm not sure it does. Actually, in the context, what does sinning mean? Sinning means the man isn't making the grade, he's not keeping the mark. I think this man is actually sinning in the eyes of the Jewish leaders. And reading it, I'm inclined to think that Jesus is telling him to put down his mat. He's telling him to, he's carrying this mat around like a bit of a trophy. Look, I've been healed. I was told to carry the mat. I'm not going to put the mat down. Jesus is saying, look, you're healed. Stop waving this around. Don't bring down these authorities on you. They're going to come down on you like a ton of bricks. Just stop that sinning and live and enjoy your new life. But now comes the even more surprising part. See, Jesus, he's accused by the Jewish leaders and says that his Father, God, is working, so he is doing it too. Now, the reason he says that is because it was generally accepted at the time that God works on the Sabbath. They believed that it's God who sustains the world moment by moment, something he was definitely doing on Sabbath days, because otherwise nothing would be around. So they did believe that God was working, but they kind of had a little bit of a restriction on it, I think. I do find it somewhat ironic, actually, that in Christian culture today, we sometimes expect God to do healing more on Sundays than the rest of the week, whereas the Jewish leaders kind of thought it the other way around. It's just an odd one, isn't it? But there we go. Here's the rub. Jesus isn't relating to God as a harsh lawmaker. He's relating to God as Father. As Father. And this is revolutionary. Jesus is saying, God and I have this great relationship. He loves me like a father loves a son. He's not out to get me, he's out to love me. He wants the best for me. And in this relationship, I'm not on the outside looking in, I'm on the inside looking out. And what's more, I'm even doing God's work. I'm equal to him. Just look at the contrast. The religious leaders of this day are all about drawing lines, separating, ensuring that everyone knows their place and keeps in line. Jesus isn't like that. Because of his relationship with God, he's all about drawing people in, breaking down barriers, reconciling. He spends his time not putting up barriers to entry, but breaking them down. He doesn't even require people to come to him. He goes to them and draws them in. This is a Jesus who creates and builds relationships. He draws people in to community, into society. There's no us and them with Jesus. There's no not good enough with him. In fact, the only people that Jesus seems to have a problem with is the people who consistently and persistently refuse to hear that God is out for the good of those he loves, and that he actually loves people. And he wants to know and care for everyone, no matter what their failures or disabilities or brokenness. And what authority does Jesus have to say this? What is this about? Can it even be believed? Who is this man? Who is this Jesus? So it turns out that what Jesus is saying here, and we can see this from the reaction of the Jewish leaders, if you thought miracles were hard to believe, this one's even tougher. Jesus is making the most outrageous and extreme claim that anyone could possibly make. Jesus is claiming in no uncertain terms to be equal to God. And if you read on through the rest of the chapter 5, you'll see that Jesus expands on this and most definitely does make this claim. Which is crazy, isn't it? In the space of a day, Jesus is going out, he's spending time with the lowest of the low, the outcast of society. And a handful of moments later, he's saying, I'm equal to God, the creator of heaven and earth, the one who sustains this world moment by moment. What's going on? What is going on? Well, here's the thing. I believe that meeting Jesus face to face means being ready to meet not only an outcast, loving, dirty-footed Middle Eastern man, but also the God of the universe who created everything and sustains it moment by moment by his own intrinsic power. Can we believe that? Jesus was the only man in history, the only one in history to not only predict his own death, but also his own resurrection. I think that's pretty impressive. Not only that, but that same death and resurrection was predicted by others hundreds of years before. After his resurrection, this fearful and motley crew of fishermen, tax collectors, doctors and other, all his disciples, they suddenly became surprisingly bold. They continued to say that Jesus had risen from the dead. So even when they were being regularly killed and persecuted, they continued to maintain that Jesus had risen from the dead. So yes, I am with the guy who came back from the dead. I think he did. He is the one who he says he is. But it's not just the evidence. I want to believe it. I'm not going to pretend that I am fully objective in this and scientifically analyzing the situation. I actually don't think that anyone who comes to fundamental issues of existence can be, but there we go. I want to believe that Jesus is who he says he is. Why do I find Jesus so attractive, so compelling? Why do I want to believe it? It's because Jesus is the great reconciler. Not just a well-wisher, but a powerful reconciler. Jesus isn't interested in being just well thought of. He really isn't. You see, if he was interested in being well thought of, he would have seen those rules in the Sabbath. He would have seen the Jewish rules. He would have kept every rule fastidiously and would have been really well thought of. He would have put himself on show time after time. He wouldn't have hidden away when people were going after him. He would have manipulated the crowds to acclaim him, and he never did that. You don't even find him showing off this guy he's just healed. He tells him, look, put down your mat, get on with your life. He's interested in something else. He's interested in drawing people in. Those on the outside of society, those who are broken, those who are lost, those who find relationships hard. In all the healings we find Jesus performing, it results in people being accepted back into normal society, being drawn back in. And as we find elsewhere, we also find that he shares this relationship that he has with God, this father-son relationship with God, he shares that with us. He joins the lowest and the highest. He joins the rich and the poor. He joins the sick and the well, the brainy, the brawny. He is a deeply compassionate God-man. He is the powerful reconciler. He's not just a good talker. He's not a great speaker. He actually has the power to make things right. He has it. He didn't just shout this stuff down from on high either. He actually came to earth. He got the dirt of earth between his toes. He came to earth and lived as a human. Not even as a king. He just lived as an everyday man. So if I want to know true intimacy in my life, if I want to know what it is to break down barriers, to be part of a community of accepting, trusted relationships, that means I need to know Jesus more. I need to know Jesus more. I want to follow him. And as I start to follow him, as I get to know him, I see this. Jesus lived an exceedingly adventurous life. Not adventurous like going out climbing extreme rock faces, although I do think that walking on water was probably pretty awesome fun. Adventurous in that he didn't shy away from danger or challenge. In the pursuit of helping people find their way back to God and back into community with others, Jesus took every risk going. Just a couple of weeks ago, we heard about his trip through Samaria, talking to a Samaritan woman at a well, a trip that most Jews, male Jews of the time, would have found deeply repugnant, but he did it. Another time, he entered a colony of highly infectious lepers. Today, we've just heard he healed people on the Sabbath, breaking the rule, going against the rulers of his people. And Jesus even chose not to defend himself when he was put on trial, facing charges of blasphemy that ended in his death. Jesus did all of this to both demonstrate and accomplish the most extreme reconciliation of all, the reconciliation of humanity and God. Jesus' death accomplishes the biggest healing miracle there is. It deals with my brokenness, allowing me to be taken as a child of God. Like Jesus, I can say, God is my Father. God is my Father. He's out to love me. And you can say that too. Are we interested in an adventure with Jesus? His kind of life? I warn you, if we are, if that's what we long for, Jesus might take us to some difficult places. We will have to take some big risks. He's led me to take some. I'm living in the middle of the consequences of some of them right now. Right now, in ways I'm being broken, but he's with me. I know I will be rebuilt because I trust him. He might take us to the relationships that today you think can never be reconciled. He might take us to the weird people on the edge of society. He might take us to the broken. He might take us to the messy, the disorganized, the hurtful, the destructive. He might take us to the manipulative, the powerful, those we consider to be right out of our league. But here is Jesus' promise, if we choose to follow, he will never leave us. He will never let us down. We will increasingly know true intimacy, true relationship with the source of all life and joy. Now, unusually, I'm not going to lead a response today. I want to leave that up to you. Matt's going to close the meeting after a short time of just quiet reflection. If you want to chat or pray afterwards, I'm here. I'll just leave you with this. I said that during my upbringing I moved around a lot, and that made it hard for me to form relationships. Well, also during my upbringing, I had the privilege of meeting Jesus. And I can honestly say that it's Jesus who's made it possible for me to enjoy today friendships that I never could have enjoyed otherwise. People in this church who I know closer than I could ever have hoped. Acceptance that I never knew, never thought I could have. He can do that for you too. He can change how we relate to people. He can build a family here. He can build a family here that is like no other, a supernatural community as we choose to follow him. Jesus invites us on an adventure to live for something new. A new depth of existence, a new kind of community based around him, the great reconciler, the reconciler of God and man, of me and you. All those things that stand between me and you today, Jesus can break those down. How will you respond? How will I respond? Will we choose to follow?